The views and opinions of findings and/or devices discussed in this podcast are those of the host, subject matter experts, and/or guests. Facts represented constitute our understanding at the time of the podcast, whereas updated factual information may be developed. They should not be construed as pronouncing an official Department of Defense's position, policy, decision, or endorsement. The host and guests of Cubist may be defense contract personnel who support TBICOE. Status of all hosts and guests will be identified during introductions to the podcast. Hi, welcome to Clinical Updates in Brain Injury Science Today, or Cubist, a podcast for healthcare providers about current research on traumatic brain injury, also known as TBI. This program is produced by the TBI Center of Excellence, or TBICOE. I'm your host, Dr. Katie Monti, a contractor in support of TBICOE. Today, I'll be speaking with Dr. Ida Babakanyan, Senior Research Neuropsychologist at Camp Pendleton, California, who is also a contractor in support of TBICOE. Dr. Babakanyan and I will discuss her group study titled Gender Disparities in Neurobehavioral Symptoms and the Role of Post-Traumatic Stress Symptoms in U.S. Service Members Following Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, which was published in the Journal of Neurotrauma in April 2024. Ida, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Katie.
All right, before we get into the study, I wanted to see if you would be willing to share with us what led to you going into TBI research. My understanding is that you were actually a clinician before you went into research. Is that right?
That's correct. My very first rotation when I was in graduate school was doing bedside evaluations in a level one trauma unit at a major hospital. And I'll never forget this little girl. She was 14 years old, and I was doing a consult bedside, and she had a severe TBI. And it was just fascinating seeing her recovery. My very first initial consult, she was chained to the bed because it was so severe. She had complete lack of awareness, impulse control issues. And I got to kind of see this girl as she progressed and her recovery through her rehabs. It was amazing. And I think it really inspired me just to learn more about the brain and this process of TBI and how people could actually really recover.
Well, that's really great. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's always nice to hear that more personal touch to our researchers' lives and how their life experiences had led them down this pathway of brain injury research. So thank you for sharing that. So this article caught my attention because I know that women have historically been underrepresented in research in general. Can you share with us why this study was done?
So to give a bit of context, it's part of a larger initiative that was a congressional mandate from 2007, and it was focused on TBIs sustained during Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom, and specifically how to characterize these injuries and follow our service members over time. So this longitudinal look at outcomes long term. So specifically, the study team felt that it's important to look at women and be able to see their progress and their healing journey and their recovery.
Yeah, in your study, I noticed you used the terms gender and men and women rather than sex and male and female. Can you explain why your group chose to base your analysis on gender rather than biological sex?
Yeah, thanks for drawing attention to that. So, you know, that was an important point that later we had to pause and go back to how that data was collected to make sure that we're kind of speaking about it with the correct constructs. So we classified men and women based on their pronouns and their medical records, unless that participant had corrected us. So based on those pronouns, we weren't asking about biological attributes. That's why we ended up going back and making sure how we collected that data and the way we're describing it is accurate.
Thank you for that explanation. So, Ida, how were the participants selected for this study?
So, as I mentioned before, this was part of a larger study called the 15-year longitudinal TBI study. 966 U.S. service members and veterans were recruited in this prospective study design. So they were enrolled and then followed up. And we were able to classify them into these three groups looking at injury classification. So there were 501 participants that were in the mild TBI group and 316 that were in the injured control group. And about 10% of both these groups had women participants in them. and to kind of define participants that were included in that injured control group, if they basically sustained an orthopedic or soft tissue injury that was not evidence of any kind of intracranial abnormalities. We also had this unique opportunity to have a non-injured control group and had 149 participants, and about 25% of those participants were women. This non-injured control group had no history of an orthopedic injury, no TBI, no medical history. So we were able to compare these three groups. We used DOD criteria to define what the TBI was, and also had a structured clinical interview defining TBI and number of TBIs.
I had a question. How does having this orthopedic injured group add value to your study's results?
You know, it's interesting when you think about doing research and wanting to look at a population like women, where especially in a context like military research, where they're significantly underrepresented, right? I mean, we're at a time where women are more and more represented in their roles within the military, but still, you know, research needs to kind of catch up to that. So when studies do this, looking at women versus men, even for TBI, it's very unique that we were able to also have an injured control group. Otherwise, we're comparing, so we have a healthy group, which is what technically we will be able to do, is compare TBI and healthy. But what about all the other things that go along with injury, right? So having an injured control group, we can look at individuals that have some other type of injury and see, are the differences we're seeing very specific to TBI, or are those differences just from being injured?
That makes a lot of sense that some of these outcomes might be affected just by having an injury in general rather than specific to their TBI.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think like first step is when you just look at outcome differences, and if we're just looking at TBI, how do we know if that difference isn't just how men and women report symptoms differently? And then I think if we get more clarity, then we'll have a TBI group versus healthy group. And then we can say that that's not just a difference of how men and women report differently, but this is TBI. But then the question can come up, well, why, how do we know it's TBI and not just injury? I think this study offers that kind of second control group where we can see if it is or not TBI.
Right. That makes sense. Can you tell us a little bit about what measures were collected? What were some of your outcomes you were looking at?
Sure. So participants completed a 2 to 3 hour battery that consisted of self-report measures that included assessing neurobehavioral symptoms. We had a measure for post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, as well as assessing for combat exposure. We had measures evaluating for quality of life. So it's a specific TBI measure called a TBI quality of life scale.
Great. And how were these measures completed? Were they in person, or what level of participation did the subjects have to complete these measures?
So about 65% of the participants completed the measures online while proctored over the phone. And then about 35% of the participants completed them in person as part of a larger battery. They did 2 days of assessments that also included cognitive measures. That's kind of outside the scope of this study. And each participant also completed that brief structured clinical interview that assessed for TBI, demographic information, and even for history of blast exposure.
Great. And what were the results of your study?
Okay, so this is the exciting part. As we initially looked at the group differences, we ended up kind of controlling for combat exposure because there was a strong relationship between history of how much kinetic combat individuals saw and that relationship between the self-report questionnaires. So we controlled for combat to look at basically other differences. And so what we found is that in the mild traumatic brain injury group, women had significantly worse scores than men. So just reported more symptoms when it was related to overall neurobehavioral symptomatology, as well as symptoms related to somatosensory and affective symptoms. Women also reported more anxiety, fatigue, and headaches on that TBI quality of life scale. In the injured control group, women had significantly worse scores than men on the cognitive measures on the neurobehavioral symptom inventory. And they also reported more fatigue and pain. There was no other significant differences for other measures in the mild TBI or the injured control group. there were no differences found in that third non-injured control. So the healthy group, there were no group differences. We conducted these analyses and we also then wanted to look at, well, what about PTSD? We know this is a very prominent presentation in military populations. And what happens when PTSD is present or absent? How does that play into how service members and veterans are reporting their symptoms? Because I think that's an important layer to the study. So when PTSD is present, women have significantly worse symptoms than men on the somatosensory cluster that I mentioned earlier. There were no other significant differences in that PTSD present group. When we compared men and women, when PTSD is absent, women had much more symptoms that looked more symptomatic. So more somatosensory, more affective symptoms, as well as anxiety and headaches. And there were no significant differences, again, in that injured control, that healthy group. There were no group differences.
That's really, really interesting. And I just want to point out for our listeners that because there were so many multiple statistical comparisons that it's mentioned in your article, there's this increased risk of type 1 error. And so your team used a p-value of 0.01 for significance, which really strengthens these results. I wanted to kind of go back to what you talked about with the women in your study reporting higher levels of neurobehavioral symptoms, like somatosensory symptoms, affective symptoms, fatigue, headache, and anxiety than the men. What do you make of those findings?
I think it's really interesting. And all those symptoms you just mentioned, Katie, women are reporting that higher when PTSD is not present. It's interesting that PTSD, when that presents, it almost seems like an equalizer. I think there's so many things to say about that, right? The somatosensory findings are consistent with prior research. You know, physically, women are different than men. So things are affected differently. So it's beyond just how women report symptoms.
Right. And I wonder, too, with the group that you mentioned had PTSD present, the women were reporting higher levels of those somatosensory symptoms than men. Do you think that's due to perhaps how women might be in tune with their body? You know, you and I have talked offline before about the book, The Body Keeps Score, and how this stress and these traumatic experiences can sometimes be held in your body over time and manifest as physical symptoms. Can you speak a little bit about these somatosensory symptoms in the PTSD present group?
Sure. If we take a step back and think about what we're measuring, it's all self-report. So these are individual perceptions and really awareness of what's happening in their own bodies. I think you make a really good point. There's a lot more of being in tune and being aware of what these changes are. You also see that, especially with PTSD, and we should also kind of consider we're controlling in this study for that combat exposure. But, you know, it'd be interesting to think about what it would look like if we didn't. So with symptoms like anxiety, how much were women supported? I think we're not talking about the limitations of the study, but, you know, there's a whole area of literature about what women go through in the military, from sexual violence to other stressors, just being a female in those kind of environments and what level of support they had.
So what were the limitations of this study?
There were several limitations. It's important to note that these results were not acutely what happened after. We don't know too much about what these groups presented after the injury. I think that would be something important to see, and what level of support and treatment they received. I think anytime we're talking about outcomes and not knowing that much about the in-between, what happened from injury to that outcome, what access to treatment and support individuals had is important. So I think not knowing that is a limitation. So that would be a plus for future research. And also just going back to how we use the women versus men, you know, I think to be more consistent with the times, having protocols that potentially ask participants how they're identifying, having more range, including the nuance of those findings in our research will be important. And also like the clinical implications we have to think about. Yes, we used really conservative cutoffs of 0.001, but we still want to know how does this translate to how some clinical indicators of functioning and recovery.
Absolutely. And, you know, with your clinical background going into research, I think you bring a very unique skill set and experience to the table. And so with your clinical background and as well as a researcher, what do you want our military healthcare providers to take away from this study?
A few things. I think one, just like how, you know, we looked at women, they're not the dominant population. But I think looking at these minority populations, even if we don't have big numbers, big sample sizes, and the nuances that sometimes just averaging everything out, we can miss maybe that needle in the haystack that we're looking for. So I think that's important.
Also, I mentioned before, treatment factors are important. I encourage researchers to gather clinically relevant data to answer the more nuanced questions that we're asking in medicine today, such as efficacy, tailored treatments, precision medicine. In order for TBI treatments to get there, researchers are in this powerful position, I believe, to translate what we've learned from outcome and longitudinal studies such as this one. I think of this almost like a clinical pathway to research and a research pathway to the clinic space. First, as researchers, we need to have a system where we are not too out of touch with what is clinically occurring on the ground level in the clinics and the programs we're assessing outcomes on and what the need is. And from the research space, I encourage researchers to think about the study designs through a more translational lens, also communicating our science in a way that the average clinician can understand and use, kind of demystifying some of the research that we do. This is also why it's a two-way street. So in order for what we do to be applicable, we need to know what the need is. Ultimately, the goal of all this is to improve the care, the wellness, health of our service members, even on a bigger level for force readiness. These things are essential.
Absolutely. Well, Ida, thank you so much for sharing your group study with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So that's all the time we have for today. You can stay up to date on future episodes by subscribing to Cubist on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts, where you can also find links to the articles we discuss and other relevant resources. Cubist is produced and edited by Vinnie White and was hosted today by me, Dr. Katie Monty. It is a product of the Traumatic Brain Injury Center of Excellence under the Research and Engineering Directorate of the Defense Health Agency, led by Branch Chief Dr. Katie Stout. Thank you for listening to this episode.